From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm your moderator, David Rennie, Washington bureau chief and Lexington columnist for The Economist. On our panel this week, Linda Feldman, Washington bureau chief for the Christian Science Monitor, and Laura Meckler, a staff writer with The Wall Street Journal. And here are the issues in a busy week. The United States reacts to the growing political crisis in Venezuela with fresh sanctions. More tit-for-tat in the spying row between Russia and the United States. President Trump orders an unexpected ban on transgender men and women from serving in the US military. And turmoil and chaos and infighting at the White House, with the president expressing extraordinary displeasure with his own Attorney General, Jeff Sessions. So, it's been an extraordinary week here in Washington, but let's not forget that we have seen real agonies, political violence, and threats of a kind of major constitutional crisis in Venezuela, a very important country in Latin America, also a huge oil supplier to countries, including the United States. So, Laura, the U.S. has announced fresh sanctions, potentially more to come. How big a deal here in Washington does Venezuela feel?
Well, truthfully, there's so much turmoil of our own flavor in Washington that I'm not sure that most people in Washington actually do think beyond our shores these days. Maybe Russia, which we'll talk about later, of course, always comes up, and you know, President Trump has engaged quite a bit in Europe. But you know, I think that, frankly, and it's a shame because what's happening in Venezuela is alarming. The unrest there, the human tragedy there, the poverty, the fact that you can't even buy basic supplies like rice, is just, what's happening there is a disaster. And this constituent assembly that President Maduro wants to create, and the elections are set for Sunday, could be make things even worse, it seems like. So the fact that people aren't really talking about it here, I think, is probably a problem. But I really, truthfully, don't think that this has really been able to break through all the clutter of what's happening around here.
So, Linda, why? So there are people in this town who are paid to worry about Venezuela,
right?
And they clearly do. Why is this rather arcane-sounding idea of an election to create this new body, the Constituent Assembly, it sounds like, just a technical change, but the people who are paid to worry about Latin America, this really concerns them? You see people talking about this could be something towards, you know, a Cuban-style communist dictatorship in this very important oil producer, Venezuela. Why is the Constituent Assembly and this election this Sunday so controversial?
So this would be a new body. This would be a workaround to avoid the legislature. And it's an election that's seen as an aim by Nicolas Maduro to gather more power. And the U.S. has warned Venezuela that if they go ahead with this election, they will put in place more sanctions. So we've already had a round of sanctions this week against 13 Venezuelan officials and others close to the Maduro regime. Those were relatively minor, but the U.S. could do much more, namely bite into the Venezuelan oil sector, which is critical to the economy. It's already a crippled economy, and it could really bring Venezuela to its knees and even possibly foment a military coup. So even as Laura says, we're not paying attention to this in Washington. It really does bear watching.
And of course, Laura, the charge against President Nicolas Maduro, the inheritor of the revolution from Hugo Chavez, is that the reason he needs to create this kind of parallel parliament is that the actual official Venezuelan parliament is in the hands of the opposition. Is that the...
Yeah, of course. And, you know, I mean, wouldn't that be convenient? You don't like the legislature you've got, just create a new one. Mm-hmm. I mean, problem solved. The country is in such economic turmoil. I just wonder, can you really get away with also destroying your democratic institutions as well, to the extent that they still exist?
And pulling back the kind of the lens a little bit, looking at the whole Western Hemisphere, traditionally, America, whether you approve of its role or not, has been the big kind of grown-up in the room. And, you know, hostile countries would say that America is a bully and it meddles and it interferes. More friendly powers would say, well, actually, it's the kind of adult supervision. And if you take that away, then, you know, Latin America has often drifted into kind of bad places. This Washington that we're sitting in today, Do you get a sense of a Washington where the State Department is running at full speed and there is adult supervision and America is playing the normal role, so if a crisis comes up, America will be on it like normal?
In a word, no. Washington is in its own turmoil. Not as bad as Venezuela, but we have a government that's, we're in uncharted territory here with the Trump administration in turmoil, an understaffed State Department, a Secretary of State who left town for a few days, and there was speculation that he was about to resign. He'd gone home to Texas for a while. And from Maduro's perspective, I think being seen as standing up to Trump and the United States is plays to his advantage. I think he believes that. And so any chest beating on the part of Washington against Maduro probably would backfire.
And it's not just looking south from here to Latin America where we see the potential for a kind of big standoff. Russia, which never seems to be out of the news here in Washington for domestic reasons to do with whether Russia helped Donald Trump or tried to help him get elected in 2016. But we're back to a kind of more classic Cold War sort of spy-style confrontation too, aren't we? So what's going on? So we have Russia announcing, Laura, that it is going to ask the US embassy in Moscow to reduce its staffing so that it has the same number of staff as the Russian embassy here in Washington. Also talk about closing two compounds in Moscow belonging to the US embassy. That sounds kind of familiar. It sounds an awful lot like something that President Obama's administration did to Russia at the very end of its term. What's going on? Are we back into tit-for-tat territory here?
Well, yeah, we are. And of course, what happened, the reason why President Obama acted near the end of his term was to in retaliation for Russian meddling in the U.S. election. Now, the question during the transition to then President-elect Trump was, is he going to allow this to stay? Well, you know, it turned out that he had, you know, still had every intention of trying to create a better relationship with Russia. And what we then saw was Congress being deeply distrustful of his ability to really stand up to Russia, given his actions since he's taken office, and then passing with overwhelming bipartisan majorities, you know, very few dissenters, passing these, not only these increased sanctions, but a provision that says the president is not allowed to change them without permission from Congress. The White House has still not yet said for sure whether he will sign the sanctions bill or not, but if he vetoes it, it will clearly be that veto will be overrode by Congress. So he's really in a no-win position. Now Russia is retaliating back. And so this all leads us to, okay, Trump has it coming both ways. On one hand, he's under significant criticism at home for being too close to Russia. And Russia certainly doesn't view him as too close at this point. They're furious about these sanctions and retaliating back. So he sort of doesn't have closer relations to produce positive results in the world that he wants. And he also is under extraordinary fire here.
Mm-hmm. So that's right, isn't it, Linda? You have this extraordinary situation that you had Donald Trump, even during his election campaign, saying things about Russia and maybe that America could work with Russia in all kinds of areas, maybe fighting together against Islamic State, maybe backing off from some of the sanctions that Russia faced over its invasion of Ukraine, that Trump thought there was a kind of new deal to be done. He was the deal maker who was going to do this new deal. Then that all got caught up in the allegation that Russia actually wanted him to win the election, was meddling in the election. So as Laura says, that whole idea of a kind of dramatic change of policy led by Donald Trump, the dealmaker, Congress has really jammed a kind of stick in that wheel this week with this extraordinary sanctions bill that doesn't just express displeasure with Russia and some other countries, but specifically says they kind of don't trust the president. They've tried to tie his hands, no?
No, it's extraordinary. And at a time of intense polarization in Washington and an inability, usually, of Republicans and Democrats to work together, you saw near unanimity between Republicans and Democrats in both houses to pass this legislation. There's a very strong message to President Trump that they're serious about hindering his ability to deal with Russia unhindered.
And help us understand the mood on Capitol Hill. You spend a lot of time on Capitol Hill and in the White House. Mm-hmm. You know, listeners around the world, they know that Congress is run by the Republican Party. That's the same party as Donald Trump.
Right.
So do they see Russia the same way? Or when you talk to senators and members of Congress, maybe in private, do they trust Donald Trump's Russia policy? Do they understand Donald Trump's policy, members of his own party?
Absolutely not. The thing about Donald Trump to understand is that he is not seen as a true blue or true red Republican. He is, I think he's renting the party. He doesn't really come from that party. He used to be a Democrat. He's very transactional in his dealings. And when push comes to shove, when you talk to members of Congress on background or off the record, they do not trust Trump. They don't trust him, in particular with Russia. I mean, witness the meeting that Trump had recently at the G20, which was just off the books, off the record, nobody present to take notes. That's just not done usually, but in Trump's world, that kind of thing is done. So we still don't know what's going on between the U.S. and Russia. And I think the votes on Capitol Hill on sanctions are an effort to tie Trump's hand and prevent him from moving unilaterally.
And that's clear. That's not the only back and forth between the White House and Congress this week. We've had a whole series of dramatic kind of votes in Congress. But we had one of these moments where Donald Trump kind of set policy via Twitter, didn't we, Laura? Where because there had been a push among some of the hardline conservatives in the House of Representatives on the issue of transgender people serving in the U.S. military, they wanted to change a defense budget to make it against the law to pay for their surgery to change from being a man to a woman surgically. They wanted to strip that out. So that had been a kind of push in Congress from some hardline conservatives who tried to change the law that way. Suddenly, Donald Trump descended from on high via Twitter to sort of set policy.
Right. So there was a lot of ironies in that particular maneuver. For starters, the House conservatives who wanted to ban the Pentagon paying for gender reassignment surgery had a vote on the House floor and it had failed. So they were looking for another way to go about doing it. And they said this spending bill that was on the floor yesterday included money for the border wall with Mexico, mm-hmm. which was one of President Trump's priorities. And so we're told that these members went to the White House and essentially threatened to blow up the spending bill and with it the border fund, the border wall money, if he did not. All they were seeking, I was told, was a promise that the Pentagon would not pay for this surgery. Mm-hmm. Well, President Trump responded with a tweet that said transgendered members would not be allowed to serve at all. That caught the Pentagon by surprise and left many, many people serving in the military not sure where they stood.
And we'll come back to this because I think it tells us a lot about the way that Donald Trump and Congress operates. But we'll have more on that in just a minute. You're listening to Issues in the News, coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. I'm your moderator, David Rennie, with The Economist. And joining me today are Linda Feldman of the Christian Science Monitor and Laura Meckler with The Wall Street Journal. This is a reminder that you can listen to Issues online as a podcast. The program is also available for free download at iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. Listen to it and then tell us what you think by taking a short survey on our Facebook page, Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. So, Linda, so you have this sort of issue about transgender people who, you know, begin life, are born a man and want to change to be a woman, or born a woman the other way around. Are there a gigantic number of transgender troops in the U.S. military? Has the Pentagon studied this? Is Donald Trump's tweet one of the reasons that he gave for banning these people from the U.S. military? Is he talked about the outrageous cost of their medical treatment? Do we have any estimates about how outrageous and large that cost is?
The spending bill that this measure was attached to was for $790 billion, with a B, dollars of military spending. And out of that, a tiny fraction of 1% could go toward transition-related health care, which is both gender, you know, a sex change operation or hormone
therapy.
So
hormone pills or
hormone
surgery.
Pills, anything related to a transition of gender. So last year, the RAND Corporation did a study, and they estimated that out of 1.3 million active duty U.S. service members, between about 1,300 and 6,600 may be transgender. So we're talking about a tiny percentage of the U.S. military identifies as transgender, and of those, maybe between, you know, 30 and 130 would be likely to use transition-related health care.
And they put a number on it. There's like the maximum number was like $8 million a year, I think it
was,
for
exactly.
the health costs
of doing this. Right, exactly. So it's tiny in a massive defense spending bill. So this was about Donald Trump needing to pass major legislation in the defense spending bill.
My favorite number on U.S. defense spending always, if you got, so $8 million is the estimated cost for this surgery and hormone pills. The U.S. military spends $437 million a year on musical bands.
Right.
So that's a bit of...
Those bands are pretty great.
But Laura, let's get into the issue of why would Donald Trump wade into what we in Washington often talk about as a culture war? Is Donald Trump traditionally a kind of hardline, Bible-bashing, Republican culture warrior? Or is this a slightly new development for him?
No, he's not. He has not been a culture warrior. However, I don't think there are a whole lot of policy views that he has that he's committed to. He is very flexible on a wide range of things in both directions. So I think that this was notable for two reasons. Well, many, but two I'll mention. One is the fact that, you know, most people believe you don't make policy via Twitter. You don't make policy like this without discussing it with the Pentagon first, without being ready to tell people who are serving in the military today what their status is. So that's number one. Number two is he's under extraordinary fire from the conservative, social conservative right, partly because of his extraordinarily strained relationship with one of their own, Jeff Sessions, the attorney general. So that's part of what was going on here. He is just needs to do something to show part of his base that he is still with them. And this was sort of one way to do that. We can get into what's happening with Sessions.
I'm really glad
too.
You mentioned Jeff Sessions. So, Linda, we have Jeff Sessions. Right. He's not just the attorney general, which is a very, very important job. Mm-hmm. He was also the first Republican mm-hmm. senator to endorse Donald Trump back when Donald Trump, some people thought, was just a TV sort of personality. He's a hardline anti-immigration kind of nationalist populist figure. So for a lot of conservatives, mm-hmm. Jeff Sessions endorsing Trump was a sign that maybe Trump was a kind of real conservative.
Right.
What's going on this week? Are they still close allies as before?
No, they are very much not close allies. It appears that Jeff Sessions is in political purgatory, perhaps about to be fired. Donald Trump has humiliated him in public numerous times, both in speeches and via Twitter. He's calling him weak in his dealings with leakers and on Hillary Clinton's alleged crimes. He says he would never have appointed Jeff Sessions had he known that Sessions would recuse himself on the Russia investigation. Jeff Sessions is standing up and saying he serves at the pleasure of the president. I think he fully expects to be fired. Donald Trump may feel this is a way to then turn around and fire Robert Mueller, the special counsel on the Russia investigation. It's a bit of a bank shot here, but we could be heading toward an actual constitutional crisis if things go that way. I don't want to get ahead of myself here on that, but it's
so let's unpack this a bit, because there's more than one stream at work here with this extraordinary presidential rebukes in public via Twitter
right.
of his top law officer, the Attorney General. So I'm glad you mentioned that his beef with Jeff Sessions is related to the idea that Jeff Sessions isn't able to give him the protection that he would mm-hmm. expect when it comes to the investigations into whether Russia and the Trump campaign worked together during the election.
Right.
The charge in Washington is that Jeff Sessions, as the chief law officer, represents the rule of law.
Mm-hmm.
And that when Donald Trump criticizes Jeff Sessions for obeying the rules and saying that actually he has a conflict of interest and so he cannot be in charge of investigations into Russia and the 2016 election.
Mm-hmm.
The charge in Washington, is this right, is that Donald Trump doesn't seem to understand that as president talking to an attorney general, this is about the rule of law. This is about
right.
the highest offices in the land. He seems to still feel that it's about personal
right.
loyalty, and he uses this language about being very disappointed
mm-hmm.
in Jeff Sessions. Is that, before we get into the other questions of kind of turmoil and dysfunction generally mm-hmm. in this White House, this row with Jeff Sessions, does it point to a sense that Donald Trump understands, as president, the importance of the rule of law and checks and balance?
We don't know what Donald Trump understands. It appears that he thinks that by making Jeff Sessions attorney general, that he would have an ally who was loyal to him, in the Justice Department, and it just doesn't work that way. Donald Trump has had many warnings that it doesn't work that way, but we don't know what he chooses to understand or chooses to, how he chooses to proceed on that score. So he may feel that, well, he can fire Jeff Sessions. He can just, with the back of his hand, make him go away and put somebody in place who he believes would be loyal. We've seen names floated for that as possible replacements for Jeff Sessions, but that's just not how it works.
And Laura, so, you know, often this town, whenever anything happens, people start talking about Watergate and Richard Nixon, and often that's a ridiculous comparison. But actually, this time, you've got a president attacking his own attorney general because the attorney general isn't available, perhaps, to fire a special independent counsel who is looking into alleged criminality and misdeeds involving the re-election campaign or the election campaign of that president. Actually, is there a reasonable comparison here with Richard Nixon? And, I mean, memories of attorney generals being threatened with the sack and firing an independent counsel? Are people's antennas kind of waggling here?
Yes, well, they are, of course. They are waggling, as you say. We don't really know yet whether this is of Watergate proportions for a variety of reasons. For starters, we don't really know what the underlying crime is. There's smoke. We don't yet know if there's fire about the relationship between the Trump campaign and Russia and whether they were involved in trying to collude as you will. So, I mean, there are indications and there were meetings and there are failure to disclose meetings, but that's not the same as proof of actual collusion. So before we actually make this a Watergate, I think we need to know whether there were actual mm-hmm. crimes. That said, yes, there are definite clear parallels of what's happening in terms of his seeming effort to want to control the Justice Department. But we also have members of Congress, again, serving as a check on this president, who are warning him that do not do that. Do not fire Jeff Sessions, and suggesting they may not confirm a replacement.
And that's a very neat link to Linda. I wanted to ask you, so we've looked at the whole question of the rule of law and the fact that this row between Donald Trump and his attorney general shows you that maybe he doesn't understand the rule of law and checks and balances. But there's something more kind of just about chaos and dysfunction. Mm-hmm. And when you see, as Laura mentions, members of Congress, members of the Senate, former colleagues of mm-hmm. Jeff Sessions, who mm-hmm. before he was attorney general was a senator, they're sort of talking about, and you saw one Republican senator saying, you know, they're going to pass their own legislation mm-hmm. to protect the independent counsel. They're very upset with the idea that Jeff Sessions is being humiliated in this way. Tell us about, beyond the sort of checks and balances and the rule of law, what is the feel this week in terms of dysfunction and chaos and the way that this White House operates? Are we in a normal political environment, or is something very odd going on here?
It's something is very odd is going on. I mean, we've now had Trump in office for 6 months, and every week we say, wow, can it get any weirder than this? And indeed, this has got to be the most tumultuous week yet, or at least ranks up there among them. I mean, you've got, you know, Trump has the ability to make what's called a recess appointment of a new attorney general. And so you've got members of Congress banding together, trying to game out how to block Trump from doing an end run around Congress. They're sort of looking at who Trump might put in place of Jeff Sessions and try to extract a promise from this person not to fire Robert Mueller.
And given that they're so willing to defy Donald Trump on Russia sanctions, on Jeff Sessions, mm-hmm. normally in Washington, you know, you're frightened as a member of Congress to go against your president. You're even frightened of his White House chief of staff. You know, these behind-the-scenes people who wield extraordinary power, mm-hmm. who are kind of the president's enforcers. Tell us about how that works, even. I mean, is the White House chief of staff, Reince Priebus, is he this kind of force in the land that people are frightened of? Is this White House exerting its influence in the usual ways?
So Reince Priebus, the president's chief of staff, is, by many accounts, is on the verge of being fired. So he's not a force. He is from the Republican establishment, which Donald Trump was elected to fight. So I think we're seeing kind of the walls are closing in on Trump.
And Laura, would you say that the situation is stable, or do you think that people expect it to get even worse?
Well, I think that most people, you cannot make predictions about this White House. Every time I think that something happens is the craziest thing ever, something crazier happens by, you know, an hour later. So,
and often,
I mean,
by Twitter. And often we learn about it by Twitter.
I mean, it's just continues to shock me what happens is happening in Washington today.
Well, that's all the time we have. And thank you to Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor, and to Laura Meckler, a staff writer with The Wall Street Journal. This program was produced by Rebecca Ward. Our engineer was Justin Thwaite, and I'm David Rennie, Washington Bureau Chief for The Economist.